was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. So I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. Then I said, listen, bud, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man.
Hello, radio fans around the Shuswap and around the world. This is Driving Through My Memories with Ed Murdoch, your genial co-host, Dan White. Thank you for sharing your time with us today. Your question for this morning is, who was the longest street in the world named for? This morning we are going to continue discussing some of the characteristics, if you like, of hauling hazardous liquids in a tanker truck. First of all, let's clear up terminology, which is oft confusing. The adverbs flammable and inflammable, pertaining to a substance or a product, mean exactly the same thing. That substance or product is highly volatile and burns very easily. Flammable and inflammable mean exactly the same thing. The opposite, not flammable or non-flammable, would indicate that a substance or a product is not very volatile or easily burned. The First Transportation of Dangerous Goods Act, or TDG, as it's known, was created in 1980 following the evacuation of 200,000 residents in Mississauga, Ontario, in 1979, when a hot box on a train developed into a lost bogey, a derailment, and an ensuing massive explosion which sent a fireball a mile into the air, which could be seen for over 60 miles. The train was pulling 106 cars filled with styrene, toluene, propane, caustic soda, and chlorine. What a lethal mix. That combination would not be allowed today. Once, many years ago, I was on my way to pick up a load of VM&P naphtha, or white gas, in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, when I was approaching a four-way stop. Suddenly, without stopping, one of those Michigan tankers with an eight-axle trailer came thundering through the intersection without stopping. Why he did so became soon abundantly clear. I wasn't close enough to notice what product he might have been carrying, but it must have been flammable or inflammable. But I did notice that he was running on a flat tire that was on fire. And he was on the fly, hoping it would burn out before he had to come to a full stop. Here was definitely a disaster in the making. And it must have turned out okay, because I never did hear otherwise. This incident took place very near where I was later waved through a traffic stoppage when a barn was burning right next to the highway. Most municipalities have dangerous goods routes, which must be strictly followed by commercial vehicles carrying hazardous materials. These routes are designated by a black diamond-shaped square with a large green circle around it on a white background. If dangerous goods are prohibited on certain routes, these are indicated with the same black diamond-shaped square, same large circle, but it's red instead of green, with a diagonal red line crossing over the black diamond. This diamond shape is representative of the placards which must be displayed on all sides of a vehicle which contains and is carrying dangerous goods. Each hazard, such as explosive, corrosive, toxic, radioactive, flammable, etc., is represented by a numbered class, and every different product within that class has a four-digit UN, United Nations number, so that it's recognized worldwide, relegated to it. When a vehicle is empty, a black and white placard must be displayed saying so. All employees working with hazardous materials must take a WHMIS course. WHMIS stands for Workplace Hazardous Materials Information System. This course provides information on each classification and appropriate emergency response to each one, including first aid if a spill or an accident should occur. When carrying any of these materials, we were required to have placards on all four sides of the trailer, as mentioned, and if it was a tanker, there were ID cards also attached to each compartment's manifold. In an enclosed van, each hazard, the type of the container it was in, the quantity, and its location in the trailer would be listed on the bill of lading. While one can of paint does not constitute a dangerous goods designation, 100 of them on a skid would. When leaving a truck carrying hazardous material unattended, the bills of lading must be left on the driver's seat or the floor beside the driver's door in the event of an incident. Emergency phone numbers are prominently displayed, and within reason, the driver must be in visual contact with the shipment and the equipment at all times. More rules and regulations, and I, like everyone, had to follow them, just like Rufus here. Born in New York State, about halfway between the Big Apple and the capital, Albany, Rufus Wainwright was raised by his mother in Montreal, following her divorce from his father, and he therefore enjoys dual citizenship. Rufus is a multi-talented person, having written a classical opera for which he won the prestigious Dora Maver Moore Award for the Performing Arts. He has also set Shakespearean sonnets to music and recorded 7 albums of original music, earning him many other nominations and awards, including 2 Junos. Perhaps you are not aware, but the gasoline for your lawnmower or the propane for your barbecue do constitute dangerous goods, although usually the size of the container is within the exemption limits and normally transport is between the point of sale and the place of use. The rule of thumb is that the container and the material together must not exceed 150 kilograms gross mass. That's 330 pounds. Most full barbecue tanks with 20 pounds of propane weigh about 36 pounds. On one occasion when I was managing the Esso card lock and warehouse in Enderby, which isn't there anymore, just the contaminated soil, a customer came in with a 45-gallon drum in the back of his private vehicle, and he asked me to fill it with fuel. Well, it wasn't legal to do so, and I refused. He was a tad upset, but did understand that if there'd been any kind of an accident or an incident, I would have been held equally responsible. The company I hauled for in Toronto mostly marketed industrial solvents. Most of them were flammable to one degree or another, and I guess they still are. However, there was one fluid which was non-flammable, and we hauled a lot of it since the company was franchised to provide the product to dry cleaning establishments from Windsor to Montreal. That product was perchloroethylene, often called perchlor, or just perch, and since Dow Chemical was its source, the brand name was Dowper. If it had soap in it, it became Dowper S. That unique odor that permeates a dry cleaning establishment, and often the clean clothes themselves, is perchloroethylene. Not used as much anymore, but still you do smell it once in a while. We often went to the Dow Marine facility near Joliet, Illinois, southwest of Chicago, to obtain it, or to the Dow Chemical plant in Sarnia. Security at the Illinois source was extremely high. We had to have an appointment, proper ID, proper clothing. We had to weigh in, have the truck and trailer inspected carefully. Each trailer compartment was swabbed for contaminants. We were asked to set our CB to a specific channel and sent to a holding area where we were to wait orders to proceed to a numbered lane in the rack to go to for loading. We then had to exit our vehicle and languish in the driver's waiting room until the required amount of product was pumped on. We then weighed out, acquired our travel and customs papers, and were released. Now, I mentioned that the product was non-flammable. Its hazard was in its density and its weight. As you know, fluids expand and shrink with heat and cold. That is why the gasoline pumps at your local filling station automatically compensate for temperature fluctuations, so you don't have to pay more than you should for a fill-up. When we self-loaded a chemical, as we often did at a majority of refinery tank farms, we always recorded the loading temperature of the product along with the number of gallons or liters, and the office personnel would do the math necessary for invoicing. Since the fluid in the underground reservoir was always cooler in the warmer months, it would warm up during transit, and so the temperature would be recorded again at the time of delivery, prior to transfer into its new home. Anyway, I digress. And I know it's confusing. I'm constantly confused.
We have a public face, walls we have to put in place, wounds of life don't leave a trace, we have our public face. Locked rooms with secret keys. Everyone's got mysteries. Things they long for secretly. Locked rooms with secret keys. A complicated witch's brew that would describe both me and you. Stumbling, wondering what to do. Almost constantly confused. Witch's brew that would describe both me and you. Stumbling, wondering what to do. Almost constantly confused. This longing to be free. It's as old as history. Gazing at the stars, we say that's who we are. This longing to be free. Overwhelmed by all we lose. With bankrupt hearts from paying dues. Look for what's shiny and what's new. We try to pick and choose. Almost constantly confused.
Well, there's no confusion about the artist. That was Murray McLaughlin, best known for his Farmer's Song. He was actually born in Scotland, but migrated to Toronto when he was 5, and he brought along his family with him. Murray has been nominated for 23 Juno Awards. He won 10, and he was made a member of the Order of Canada in 1993. Mr. McLaughlin holds a commercial pilot's license, and he worked Canada's North as a bush pilot. He also has endorsements for multi-engines and seaplanes. He once piloted a Cessna 185 float plane across country for a TV special called Floating Over Canada, which was broadcast on PBS and the CBC. Perchloroethylene, or Dauper, weighs approximately twice as much as water, so a full legal load would only take up a small portion of the compartments it was loaded into, thus creating a hazardous opportunity for that liquid to slosh around according to the direction and momentum of the unit. One had to be very careful on corners, especially S-curves, as the product would climb up one side of the curved compartment and then rush over to the other side, causing a very unstable equilibrium. The same would take place if one stopped the truck very quickly. Coming around the bypass on Highway 40 at Sarnia one day with a load of Dauper, I was following a Volkswagen, and we were coming to a traffic light. As the Volkswagen came to the intersection, the light started to change. I thought he would barge through because he did have plenty of time, in my opinion, but he came to a screeching panic stop, and I tried to do the same. I did successfully initially come to a stop. However, the product was now sloshing back and forth, and each time it came forth, it was like a punch in the back. And no matter how hard I stood on the brakes, the truck would lurch ahead a few inches with each hit. Eventually, I lost sight of the bug as it went under the front hood, and the rig centimetered ever closer to him, and finally his back bumper was tapped with the cow catcher on the front of my truck. He got out of his car to see what was going on, and when I explained to him what had occurred, he was very understanding, and he apologized for his impetuosity. These are reactions to actions few motorists ever take into account, but having heard this story, I trust a new awareness has been awakened here today. It's always a good idea to be as aware as to what is taking place behind you as well as in front. All of the products we handled had various and unique characteristics. Some were lethal if the fumes were inhaled in any significant amount. You remember the story I told you before about me passing out on the top of the tanker? All of them, of course, were toxic if swallowed. A few corrosives would eat your skin, while others caused burns of varying severity. My oldest boy and I were delivering an evening load of a highly refined solvent to General Electric in Toronto about 30 years ago. First, we had to submit samples from each compartment, which went to the lab for testing. Once we got the go-ahead to unload, we hooked up our hoses and started the pumps. When a compartment was nearly empty, the hose would start to jump a little and become more pronounced as more air was being sucked through the system than product. Chris was switching compartments, and when he undid the clamps on one of the fittings, he was showered with the product under pressure. I had to hand it to him. He was able to relock the fitting to stop the spray, but he was completely soaked from head to toe, and he already could feel the heat on his skin. The infirmary was across the compound with a nurse on duty 24/7, so he ran for help while tearing off his chemically soaked clothing. The nurse saw him coming. She was already in emergency mode, ushering him into the shower, where he removed all his clothing, including his shoes and socks. Now, those were the only clothes he had with him. What was he going to wear home? Fortunately, I had a large-sized pair of coveralls, which were relatively clean in the jockey box, and after he had soaped down and washed all the product from his skin and hair, he air-dried, pulled on the coveralls, which almost fit him, as he was bigger than I was. But he had to go home barefoot. Lesson learned. Never be too lazy to climb up the ladder onto the catwalk with a flashlight to check the hatch and make sure the compartment is really empty prior to unlocking the fitting and removing the line. Oh, by the way, before unloading, what must one do in order to preserve the integrity of the tank? Well, you're absolutely right. One must open each hatch, flip the flap over, and let the hatch down again so that A, air can get in to replace the product as it unloads and prevent the collapse of the metal skin on the trailer, and B, if it's raining, it prevents moisture from entering the compartment and mixing with the product, and if it's dry, it keeps the dust out. I have seen trailers, and maybe you have too, that have imploded because someone forgot to open the hatches. I came close a few times, but usually you could hear the suction as the air was trying to get into the compartment, and you literally ran up the ladder to flip open the hatch before disaster struck. It doesn't take long with some of the high-speed pumps. Our tractors all had power takeoffs and could pump independently when the customer did not have the equipment or the equipment was busy. But the best and fastest unloading was by gravity, where one would just place the downspout into the downpipe on the unloading patio, and the product would run by itself into the underground reservoir. And a 4-inch diameter hose was very fast indeed. We are about to change gears here in mid-flight. Now, how's that for a non sequitur? Well, there is a rig involved, and a cargo, and a destination, and it will all make sense if you just ride along with Margie and Reggie and enjoy the fun.
Have you heard the news in Newfoundland, rolling around the rock? How Reggie brought for Margie home a cowsy dungsy clock. With Margie being a farm girl, she almost took a fit to find the cowsy dungsy clock was really made of it. The clock was from Toronto, and her mind was soon made up. She said to Reggie, get the cowl and load her on the truck.
We're heading for Ontario and we're off to make her big. Cause Margo's got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig. Reggie's got the rig. Reggie's got the rig. Margo's got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig. Now they're rolling through the Maritimes, the truck was nearly full. The cow began to bawl, she was lonesome for the bull. The Mountie pulled them over, is there something I can do? Go right ahead, Sir Margie said, climb in the back and move. Now when they got to Montreal, they missed the auto route. But they found that everyone in town was glad to help them out. The sooner you hit Toronto, they said, the sooner you'll make her big. Cause Margo got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig. Reggie's got the rig. Reggie's got the rig. Margo's got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig. The truck was overflowing when Toronto hit the rise. The 401 was full of dung and the cab was full of flies. We're losing lots of money, Rich, we can't afford to stop. We gotta find the place that makes the cowsy dungsy clock. Well, I wish you could have been there on the corner of Queen and Young when Margot found the company and she dumped her load of dung. And when she found the office, she was singing and doing a jig. Margot's got the cargo buys and Reggie's got the rig. Reggie got the rig. Reggie got the rig. Margot brought the cargo buys and Reggie brought the rig. It was later in the evening when they heard from Mr. Judge. I don't know what they give yous, but I'll never hold a grudge. I think $1,000 would be fair to hand you down, and 30 days of lodging will be free upon the town. Now Margo says to Reggie, what a hell of a deal we struck. We might have lost a cow by, but still we got the truck. And now they're back in Newfoundland, they're loading up the pig. Cause Margo got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig. Reggie's got the rig. Reggie's got the rig. Margo's got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig. Margo's got the cargo by and Reggie's got the rig.
Well, who else? That was the late Stompin' Tom Connors. He did mention Toronto, and he did mention Yonge Street. Okay, picture us at the foot of Yonge Street in Hogtown, right by the Center Island Ferries. Yes, okay, standing knee-deep in rainwater. Yonge Street is the center of Toronto. Major streets such as Front, Wellington, King, Adelaide Street, Richmond, Queen, Bloor, St. Clair, Eglinton, Lawrence, and on up are numbered either east or west, starting at Yonge Street. It's also has the distinction of being the home to the first subway in Canada. Years before that, an electric rail service, the Toronto and York Radial Railway, the forerunner of the TTC, or Toronto Transit Commission, ran from Toronto to Lake Simcoe until 1948. I can remember riding on it with my mother to Richmond Hill, Thornhill, and Aurora. In 1793, Sir John Graves Simcoe, Lieutenant Governor of Upper Canada, named the primitive roadway after Sir George Young, Canada's first colonial administrator and British Secretary of War, and an expert on Roman roads. Also, the answer to today's question. It was designated an event of national historic significance. Yonge Street has been called Main Street, Ontario, and at one time it was listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as the longest street in the world at 1,178 miles. Kilometers had not been invented yet, so if you must do the math, be my guest. It began where we are standing, knee-deep in, okay, rainy water. And it ended at, wait for it, Rainy River. In Ontario, across the river from Baudette, Minnesota. Now that's northwest of Thunder Bay. Rainy River flows from Rainy Lake near Fort Frances into the international waters of Lake of the Woods, and then into the Winnipeg River, then into Lake Manitoba, which drains into the Nelson River, eventually emptying into Hudson Bay. The section of Highway 11 from downtown Toronto to just north of Barrie has been decommissioned, and it is no longer designated Highway 11, so I'm very sorry to have to announce that it is no longer the longest, that distinction having been assumed by Highway 17, which isn't really a street, but it is 1,220 miles or 1,964 kilometers, they having been invented by the time the Trans-Canada Highway came into effect. Highway 17, or the Trans-Canada Highway, begins east of Ottawa, and it ends at the Ontario-Manitoba border, west of Kenora, on the same beautiful Lake of the Woods. My first trip across Highway 11 was in the mid-50s, before it was paved from Hearst to Longlac, which is about 120 miles. Because this is such a long and lonely stretch, with virtually zero civilization, prior to that, motor vehicles were required to sign in at one end and sign out at the other. Wayne Rostad is probably best known for his TV show On the Road Again, which ran on the CBC from 1987 to 2007. He earned 8 Gemini nominations and 1 Juno. He was made a member of the Order of Canada in 2003 and was inducted into the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame in 2010. Now here is what Wayne has to say about Highway 11.
Monday night, we're going to move all the tables, we'll sleep on the floor overnight, and nobody's married for the next 46 hours. Boogie, boogie. I think it should be fun. Let's see, we got a couple of things we have to do. We've been getting a few requests. Now, for all of us that drove up here tonight sober, I know it was dangerous, and I'm very happy that you're all here safely. Don't forget, get good and snapped, and the way home will be much safer. Especially on old Highway 11. It's the only way to drive it. Get severely intoxicated. It's a countryside story full of sunshine and glory. Hey, won't you come for a visit? Take the old Wakefield train. Smile at a stranger. Go visit a neighbor and love everybody. Say all of you. It's not like it once was. The big timber's all gone. They're cutting up north now, Maniwaukee. And the people live high by the streams and the rivers, praying to Jesus to help fill their needs. It's just a countryside story. It's full of sunshine and glory. Hey, won't you come for a visit? Take the old Wakefield train. Smile at a stranger. Go visit a neighbor and love everybody. Cause they all love you. Well, there's just one train weekly. It's got freight for the townships. The city a steamer trip to the 1057 is out of retirement, reliving the old days like the old timers do. It's just a countryside story. It's full of sunshine and glory. Hey, won't you come for a visit? Take the old Wakefield train. Smile at a stranger. Go visit a neighbor. And I love everybody, cause they all love you. Now old Highway 11 sure is rough and uneven. It winds through the valleys that the river runs through. And the bushmen, they live happy in little home-built log shanties and wonder why the people down in Mississauga live like they do. It's just a countryside story full of sunshine and glory. Hey, won't you come for a visit? Take the old Wakefield train. Smile at a stranger. Go visit a neighbor and love everybody. Say all of you. chances are that somebody will love you the way that I do.
Thank you. Well, that was Canada's own Wayne Rostad. And now the news. New technology has allowed a partnership to provide hands-free waystation bypass service, something I have been crowing about for years. Finally, someone is listening. Every time a unit must enter a waystation for inspection, even a five-minute delay can cost upwards of $10 in time and fuel. Sometimes these inspections may take up to an hour, and if one is traveling, say, from Montreal to Vancouver, multiply the cost by anywhere up to 15 or 20 inspection facility stops. If a unit is compliant when leaving Montreal, wouldn't it still be compliant at all these other facilities, assuming no deliveries or cargo exchanges have occurred in transit? And these interruptions in continuity could also be factored into the equation, and a registry of trusted carriers compiled said only the iffy companies with poor compliance ratings get pulled in for an inspection. There is a growing anticipation of the all-new generation of EOBR, that's electric onboard recorders, being implemented and enforced in all North American jurisdictions. Considered tamper-proof, these devices will remove driver input, including falsification of data, and provide an accurate picture of the hours an operator of a big rig actually spends on his or her various duties in a day, a week, a month, and all in real time. Perhaps the introduction of this method of time capture will also bring to the forefront the need to review how professional drivers and owner-operators are remunerated. It is no secret, but such a travesty and a poor reflection on the industry, that our truckers currently hide as many work hours in a shift or a week as they can get away with because those hours do not provide any revenue. And the saved hours are then made available for moving freight, which does provide revenue. And I don't see anyone, even with my spectacles on, rushing to throw money at the situation. Not the carriers, not the unions, not the trucking associations, and certainly not the governments, federal, state, or provincial. Trucking is the only occupation I can think of where this anomaly exists. And I recently came across an article I wrote in 2008 in a national transportation magazine harping on this very fact. Obviously, nothing has changed in that respect since, but maybe, just maybe, with the introduction of the EOBR, once the authorities and the employers really see what is happening, positive progress in this area will take place. I'm not holding my breath, but folks, something has to change, or the predicted and promised driver shortage, which is already beginning, will escalate to a point where all our pocketbooks are affected. And apparently, as is suggested by our next performer, this discrepancy affects all genders. Listen.
Than PMS. This job ain't worth the pay. Can't wait till the end of the day. Hey, honey, I'm on my way. Hey, 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 honey, I'm home and had a hard day. Pour me a cold one and oh, by the way, lay up my feet, give me something to eat. Fix me up my
Yeah. don't stimulate my brain. This job ain't worth a penny. Can't wait till the end of the day. Hey, honey, I'm on my way. Hey, 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 hey. I'm home and have a day. Pour me a cold one, oh, by the way. Lift up my feet, give me something to eat. Fix me up my favorite dream. Honey, I'm back, it's killing me. I need to relax and watch TV. My neck, will you?
Honey, I'm home, and I want to get paid for every moment I put in on this job. That was, of course, Shania Twain, who was born Eileen Regina Edwards, her parents already recognizing her as a queen with the name Regina when she was born in Windsor, Ontario. At age two, her mom and dad divorced, and the mother, along with Eileen's sisters, moved to Timmins, where her mother married Jerry Twain, who adopted the girls, hence the legitimate surname. Struggling in her early years in smoky, sleazy bars, Ms. Twain rose above it all and in 1997 became the only female act in any genre of music and performance to produce the best-selling studio album and the best-selling country album of all time with Come On Over. It sold more than 40 million copies worldwide. Following her mother and stepdad's death in a car accident near Wawa, Ontario in 1987, Shania brought her younger siblings to live with her in Huntsville, Ontario, where she had a regular gig at the Deerhurst Lodge. Twain's career has been meteoric, but steady now, and besides her many Juno and Gemini Awards for singles and albums, in 1999, Shania was named the first non-USA Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, and also Entertainer of the Year for the Academy of Country Music. In 2003, she was inducted into Canada's Walk of Fame. 2 years ago, received her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Also that year, Shania was inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame, and in 2005 became not just a member, but an officer of the Order of Canada. Twain is ranked number 7 of the 40 greatest women of country music television. Now that's rank. Little known fact. Scientists from the universities of Toronto and California have revealed in the prestigious journal Vision Research that Shania Twain, based on the golden ratio, possesses the perfect face. She was also voted PETA's sexiest live vegetarian. Okay, that's enough. The premise that all truckers speed in order to make up the miles is a bit far-fetched. Naturally, as we can all attest, there are those that do on occasion push the limit a bit. But since it has been proven ad nauseum that there is no reward in driving fast, in fact, just the opposite, the majority of blacktop pilots drive moderately like you and me. Well, like me, since I don't know for sure how you drive, but I would assume that as a regular listener to this show, you are a sensible vehicle operator, so you and I won't have to be looking over our shoulders for the man as we rush about making our deliveries.
state, I'm the highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren a-screaming and my flashing red lights. I work all day and I work all night, just to keep in law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job, I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol, the highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving slow. I'm just doing my job, I'm the highway patrol. I'm just doing my job, I'm the highway patrol. Registration and insurance. Do you have any idea how fast you were going?
Just when you think it's over, it is. That was Paul René Belobersicki, the state trooper who just entertained you, and is a Canadian as the tar sands and the Calgary Stampede, where he was born. In 1 week, it will be 41 years ago, and he is the most awarded male artist in Canadian history. Only you know him as his adopted professional name, Paul Brandt. Brandt was a pediatric registered nurse at the Alberta Children's Hospital in Calgary when he was catapulted to international fame with his single My Heart Has a History. Still today, he works with terminally ill children and is heavily involved with World Vision. Brandt has acquired 2 honorary doctorates, one for fine arts from the University of Lethbridge and one in divinity from Briarcrest College and Seminary. His accumulation of awards is too long to list, but Paul has 13 Canadian Country Music Awards, including 5 Male Vocalists of the Year, 13 Juno nominations, 8 Juno Awards, a dozen others, including a once-in-a-lifetime, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal, this year presented by the Prime Minister. The producers of Driving Through My Memories have recently learned that the average age of the North American trucker is more advanced than one once thought. That magic number is 46, not 44, as heretofore reported. Also, the number of drivers over 65 still wandering the blacktop has increased by 1.5%, a truly staggering figure. A momentous event is about to take place, the unveiling of the long-awaited, by whom I'm not sure, the NAFMP. That's not North American Fatigue Management Program. It's an anagram that doesn't pronounce easily. I've no idea how many millions of taxpayer dollars have so far been sunk into this groundbreaking research, but silly me, I thought it was always quite reasonable just to lie down when I felt a bit tired or drowsy, weary or sleepy, hungover or whatever, and then when it came bedtime to actually undress and climb between the sheets for the mandatory 8 hours. For better than 50 years while operating big rigs, I never once yearned to have some lettered scholar suggest to me when I needed to take a power nap. I guess the good old days just weren't good enough. By the way, next Thursday, this gear jockey will have celebrated 62 years of owning a commercial driver's license. 62 consecutive years next Thursday. That's our show for today, folks. Friday the 13th falls on a Saturday today, this July, so move about accordingly. And to take us out, I'd like to play a little bit more of Murray McLaughlin. Here's his farmer's song.
Dusty old farmer, out working your field, hanging down over your tractor wheel. The sun beating down turned the red paint to orange, and rusty old patches of steel. There's no farmer songs on that car radio, just cowboys, truck drivers, and pain. Well, this is my way to say thanks for the meal, and I hope there's no shortage of rain. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. The combines gang up, take most of the bread. Things just ain't like they used to be. Your kids are out after the American dream, and they're working in big factories. If I come by when you're out in the sun, can I wave at you just like a friend? These days when everyone's taking so much, there's somebody giving back in. Mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city.
This has been Driving Through My Memories. This is the Bird Dog saying all this, going this away, moving and grooving. Don't forget to wash behind those ears, and remember, one atomic bomb just might ruin your whole day. See ya.